you guys like free things? Because I absolutely love free things. Do you want to know what's for free? Downloading the Himalaya app. It is 100% for free. And it's awesome because they will curate a library of podcasts made especially just for you. How incredible and special does that feel? I love feeling special and I love free things. Download the Himalaya app to listen to my podcast, Fish Cheeks. Hey guys, welcome back to a new episode of Fish Cheeks. How your fish cheeks doing? Mine have been kind of lazy sitting on the couch during this pandemic, doing nothing, kind of floppy. Anyways, welcome back guys. Today I'm doing a quarantine edition of this podcast. Also be talking to a really special guest, Lily Chen, Dr. Lily Chen. She has been my best friend and has been taking care of me ever since we were 13 years old. Now she is on the front line battling, fighting this virus, and I'm so proud of her. She was appointed to the COVID positive ICU just the other week. So she will be hopping on this call and she will be informing us and telling us her experience with battling this pandemic.
Thanks, guys.
I love you. Stay safe and stay at home. Oh, also a little backstory of my guest, Lily Chen. So we met in a speech and debate class when we were 13 in seventh grade. And I was such a loser in middle school. I used to just like eat lunch in the basement. And then I met Lily, who is this vibrant, like beautiful, she was like popular girl. And we became friends and we would hang out together every Friday. We would do crazy things together. Like, and by crazy things, I mean like walk to the mall in the rain. And we went to the same middle school, went to the same high school, and we were just like, we're like sisters. And so she went off to Berkeley, and after that, she went to Washington University. So for like 8 years, she didn't live in LA, and she is doing her residency now in Los Angeles. And she moved in to the same apartment building that I live in because, you know, we're best friends and we live on the same floor, and we're super, super close. And she really is like a sister to me, and she's a doctor now. I'm so proud of her. When she told me that she was appointed to the COVID positive ICU, like my heart dropped. And I know what she's doing is so necessary, but I'm so attached to her personally that I just felt so scared and worried for her. Guys, this is Lily. She is my best friend, and she was appointed to the COVID positive ICU like a couple weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, a week ago.
So, yeah, I was appointed to the COVID ICU last week, and one of the first people I called was Olivia. Or maybe she,
I know.
She was so great at like checking in on me during this time and making me food, but I was like, at first had to process it a little bit. I mean, it's a crazy time to train in the medical field, and like, I had no idea, like everyone else, that a pandemic was coming. So it's definitely an interesting experience.
What would you say is like your biggest takeaway from this experience right now?
Well, this experience has been like extremely challenging, but gratifying. And I think during this time when I'm dealing with really sick patients that have COVID, and during this time when we're not allowing any visitors in the hospital, one of the most important things, second to taking care of the patient, is calling their family and updating them on how their loved one is doing. Mm. And my biggest takeaway from this experience is just to really be kind and be your best person and tell the people you love them, because life is short.
Yeah. So the patients who are in ICU, they don't have any visitors come and visit them?
Correct. So, and this may vary from hospital to hospital. The hospital I work at, in efforts to social distance, we've now restricted all visitors from coming to the hospital. And so it's just healthcare providers. And even a lot of our clinics are closed down. It's really just essential healthcare providers that are allowed in the hospital and other staff members that also play a really big role in keeping the hospital going. But I think the toughest part is for families and for patients is to be completely isolated.
That's so, so sad. It's heartbreaking because if I was sick right now, I would want my mom to be with me, you know?
Not. Yeah. And I think the worst part about this disease is once you're positive and if worse comes to worse, you pass away, you die alone. No family members are allowed to visit. And I had this really interesting realization where depending on what cultural burial practices you or your loved ones might practice, some of those might not be possible in the COVID era if you are to be COVID positive. And so it really affects all aspects of someone's life.
Wow, I didn't even think about that. Wow.
For me, I didn't think about it either. You know, when I was dealing with that situation, it was really eye-opening. You know, not only does this virus affect you in life, but also in death. And it's just so tragic.
Yeah. How do you stay so... 'cause I know you personally, you cry watching a commercial, you have you're so emotionally filled and you have so much empathy for people. How can you stay calm in a situation where it's so tragic like that?
You know, I definitely find this experiencing challenging in many ways, physically, mentally, but most of all, emotionally. And like you said, I am a crier and I definitely find myself crying in the bathroom during and after these patient encounters and even talking with families. During this week, I have talked to these patients' families more than I've talked to my own. And, each conversation is really emotional for me because there is so much hurt and so much hope as well.
This makes me cry.
It's very sad. And as someone's doctor, even though I am an optimist and I like to always put a positive spin on things, I think as someone's doctor, it's really important to be very honest. And so delivering bad news has been really tough on me. And it's tough on everyone. And I think it's important, even, you know, before COVID, as someone dealing with really sad circumstances and life and death, to figure out a good release. And for me, that's, you know, calling my family and my friends and journaling and going on a run. And so I think it's really important for everyone during this super hard time, not just healthcare providers, to be kind not only to others, but to yourself and check in with yourself and give yourself a break and take care of yourself, you know, spiritually, emotionally, physically.
Wow. That just took me on a roller coaster of emotions, Lily.
Yeah.
I feel like you're the bravest person. It's interesting because as our friendship evolves, you know, I see you in this light and you're always such a positive, happy, sweet, kind person. And then you're put into this like war zone where you have to be calm and honest and super strong. I'm just like, I'm just so proud of you. I always like knew that you were going to be a doctor, but I guess I never knew why.
Yeah, I feel like I definitely had the idea in mind growing up, but it didn't really solidify until college when I was very involved in a community free clinic. And I discovered that I really wanted to empower people by educating them about their bodies. And being a doctor is a great way to do that. And that's what really motivated me to become a doctor.
And it's so hard to become a doctor.
You know, for my first year of residency, it's general medicine. So different than like my ultimate specialty, which is dermatology, and to think like,
so different.
This is like the training I'm getting is something I didn't expect, but I'm happy to help and so glad to be in a position that I can help as well.
You're my primary care, basically.
So I think a really great way to quantify it is, if you can speak in full sentences without losing your breath. And so you and I having this conversation, where speaking in full sentences, actively engaging in conversation, but when your breathing gets to a point where you're not able to speak in full sentences, that's a good indication to go to the hospital. When someone comes to the hospital and needs to be hospitalized, oftentimes our tests don't come back fast enough. So when someone is hospitalized, it's usually because they're needing additional oxygen.
Mm.
We test them for COVID and it can take, you know, 1 to 3 days for results to come back. So we label these patients as persons under investigation. And so people are admitted when they're needing additional oxygen. And really, once someone tests positive for COVID, the management doesn't change that much. It's really just providing you additional oxygen and just monitoring your daily blood work. And even with your daily blood work, there's very little that we do based off of what we see. This virus affects people in so many different ways. You can be totally asymptomatic. You can have flu-like symptoms and get over it on your own. And some people need hospitalization. I would say if you're having symptoms, knowing that there's very little the hospital can do except give you additional oxygen if you're not oxygenating well, I recommend people with mild symptoms to stay at home. But of course, this is my medical opinion. And as a disclaimer, not as this shouldn't be taken as advice or over your own personal doctor's opinion. But I would say if you're having mild symptoms, fever, cough, try to stay at home and see where it goes. But if you're finding yourself having trouble breathing, definitely come to the hospital.
When your symptoms have subsided, are you still contagious?
I think that's something that's actively being studied.
Mm.
It's such a new virus and it's really hard to say. Like, we've heard some people recommend 7 days of self-quarantine versus 14 days. And really, all these numbers are completely arbitrary. They're just guesses. And so nobody really knows if you can get COVID just one time and become immune, or if you can get COVID again. The most important thing we can do is just social distance until the growth rate slows down.
And is the theory about, you know, when the weather changes and it gets warmer, you know, this thing will just die. Is that true?
I definitely hope that there's some seasonal aspect to this. There are viruses that, you know, like the flu, there is flu season. And so
yeah.
I'm definitely hoping that this virus also has a seasonality to it, but only time will tell. I will say that this virus affects anyone. I've seen people in the ICU younger than I am. I've also seen people 90 years old and do well. And so I think this virus can affect anyone. And no one's really protected from it, either directly or, you know, on the sidelines. I think at one point, everyone will have some sort of, will feel some sort of impact from the virus, definitely.
Really? How can people donate masks to the hospitals? Because I know there is a shortage. So how can people do that?
So you can, oftentimes, like I know my hospital has a website, so you can Google the hospital name and like donate masks, and the link will usually show up. And donations for like boxes of unopened masks and other supplies are great things to do for your local hospital. Also, donating blood. There's a critical shortage now that we can't have regular blood drives. And so, you know, before COVID, people, you know, donated blood at school or, you know, at a community center. Now all of those gathering places are shut down temporarily. And so we're finding ourselves in this tough position.
Interesting. So donating blood is really important right now.
And yes, just there is, COVID is like our main concern right now. And, you know, everyone that comes into the hospital, their first thought is COVID, but there are still 1,000 other ways people get sick. And, you know, COVID affects those people too, because our resources are being pulled into this very high risk population. And so, you know, like I said before, everyone's going to feel the impact of COVID, and mm-hmm. even if you're sick for other reasons, just the fact that the hospital's locked down, that we're not doing elective procedures, like it affects everyone, COVID or not.
And I feel terrible for the patients in the hospital that are hospitalized and they don't have COVID. So I'm sure it affects the way they're being treated, because now do they have to move? How do you like prevent someone with, you know, maybe a compromised immune system and they're there for a different reason for them to not get COVID?
You know, every hospital is probably doing things differently. I can speak from my own experience. We're really trying to designate COVID areas so that we limit exposure to other people in the hospital. And so we have COVID floors. But it's also, you know, very tough to limit the spread when people are asymptomatic. You know, some people come to the hospital for other reasons other than to be totally asymptomatic. And right now we don't have enough tests to just test everyone. We're really having to test the most high risk population.
Is the test like you sneeze into a cup?
So the test is a swab in the nose and then one in the mouth. If you've ever been tested for the flu, it's similar to that. The swab that goes deep into your nose and then another one in the mouth. And it's really detecting the genome of the virus. So if you've heard of DNA, this virus is an RNA virus, which is similar to DNA. A lot of the drive-by tests are serologic tests, meaning they're detecting your body's response to the virus, not detecting the virus itself.
So there's a difference between the hospital test and the drive-through tests.
Yes. The drive-through test will likely be like a very quick resulting test, meaning that they should give you results in, let's say, 10 minutes.
Is it accurate?
So it's very, and with all tests, we have like two metrics. It's the sensitivity and the specificity of the test. So these drive-through tests, I don't know how sensitive they are. And really, they're just detecting if you've been exposed to the virus.
Got it.
Because it's not detecting the virus itself. It's hard to make a diagnosis off of it, and it's really more of a screening test rather than a diagnostic test, meaning that we can't make a diagnosis off of it. Mm-hmm. But in these like emergent times when we're really needing to triage people, this is one way to triage the sick from the sickest.
So how many hours a day do you work?
I mean, you've seen it firsthand. It really varies. I think on average 70 to 80 hours a week. So there are good days and there are bad days. But, you know, as a medical education community, I think there is this push to regulate the number of hours and make sure that we at least get 8 hours between shifts to sleep and whatnot. I will say getting only 8 hours between shifts still means you're working for up to 18 hours.
That is insane. And, you know, there are so many doctors like you who have families, who have kids, and have all these other things that they, you know, have to take care of their lives. And so I just want to just applaud for working so hard doing this, and yet you're still so kind. You're doing this podcast with me. You could be sleeping right now, so thank you so much for doing this. So can you reiterate some things that we can do for ourselves and for people in the medical field that can make your guys' lives a little easier?
I think the most important thing is staying safe at home and social distancing. We're seeing a continuous rise in the number of COVID cases. And at one point, our fear is that the hospitals won't be able to keep up. For now, we're doing okay. But in other cities in the US, not so much. So number one thing to do for not only yourself, but for your community is social distancing and staying safe at home. In terms of evaluating your own risk for COVID, I mean, really, if you're able to measure your temperature each day, if it's above 100.4, you know, write that down and monitor your breathing. If you're not able to speak in full sentences and engage in a conversation, or if you're feeling a little altered, go to the hospital.
And be kind.
Yes, and be kind. And, you know, Olivia and I always like to say that, you know, everybody's out there trying their best. So be kind and be your best.
Yes, it is a really scary time. And I was just talking about how there are so many violent acts that are happening towards Asian Americans. And it's very frightening. And it makes me worried about my parents, and I don't know how I feel, but It's a really scary time for us and in our community. And I just urge all of you guys to just be kind. And if you see something that is happening that is really wrong, do something about it, please. Because we're all in this together. We're global citizens. And all we need to do is just be kind and love each other. And that is the most important thing. Right, Dr. Lily?
I 100% agree.
Well, Lils, thanks so much for talking to me. You're the best. Guys, Dr. Lily is the best. Yeah, stay safe out there. And if you see Dr. Lily, say hello.